This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Sports royalty is on the air. This is the only show with so much talent and expert analysis, it can barely be contained. Jump on now or it'll pass you by. This is Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution.
Place to Be Nation, we are down 2-4. Welcome to your home for everything sports, a fired up Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution. What a turnaround, huh? We just had a show on Thursday. Thursday morning on the site, placebination.com. And we're right back here recording on Sunday night, right after a fun weekend of divisional playoff games went down. And we are down to 4 with the conference championships in exactly 7 days, or 6.5, depending on your specifics. Let me bring in the guys. And pretty simple. It's the Trinity tonight. Myself and the world tag team champions of Tom Brady's heart, the Cowboys. First off, Junior, Roger Morissette.
What's up, Scott?
How are you, sir?
Fantastic. Been parked in front of the TV for about 48 hours.
Can't beat it. The indentation in the new couch, in the new digs, is firmly trenched with your buttocks. And you're sitting right now. What do you got going in the background? We got the big card tonight, huh? Up at the hub?
Yep, just watching the prelims for UFC Fight Night, Cruz versus Dillashaw. Going to be a great fight.
Excellent.
I'm all jacked up.
Well, we won't be recording that late, so you don't have to worry about needing to keep us in the loop. But always, I love being on with you, Cowboys. So. And one guy who had a 50-50 weekend, at least on Saturday, a fun day on the gridiron, but a sad day on the hardwood, Cowboy Senior.
How you doing, Scott?
I'm well, sir. It was a 50-50 day for us on Saturday. Big win for the Pats. Tough loss for the
Pats. It was. I guess we got the most important win, you know, because that was the one where if you lose, it's all done. So
exactly.
Got to be happy about that. And in the background right now, I was just doing the tomahawk chop with the Florida State fans as they seem to be putting Virginia away. And
yes,
a lot of that 50-50 thing is seeing the number 13 team lose today is nice, and seeing as many top 25 losses as possible. It's that time of year where everybody's going to lose some conference games, so I think our Friars will be okay. We got a big one Tuesday night. We'll bounce back.
Yes. No, absolutely. And, it'll be it was a crazy weekend in college basketball. We'll touch on that. We're going to let everyone pretty much know ahead of time. We're going to be pretty much 100%, almost 100% football for this episode because we got a lot to talk about. Got a lot to talk about. We got to recap 4 games and then preview next week's 2. We'll chat a little bit about college hoops because yes, it was a tough loss. 81-72, Friars lost at home to the Pirates of Seton Hall. I didn't see that coming, I'll be honest with you. And it begins a big gauntlet for the Friars beginning Tuesday night against Xavier. Is that what this one is?
No, Butler.
Butler, the other one, the other Midwest team. Right. I think it's Butler. It goes Butler, Nova, Xavier, Georgetown. That's the order. So
you got it.
Butler on Tuesday night.
4-0.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the spirit, Cowboy.
There you go. All right. So, guys, let's break it down. And why don't we begin with the game that mattered the most to you two yesterday afternoon in Foxborough, where the Patriots are playing in their 5th straight AFC championship game, a 27-20 win over the Chiefs in a game that didn't seem like I caught a little bit of it. You guys obviously watched much more of it than I did. A game it seemed like the Patriots were dominating, and then Kansas City kind of chipped away late. But Senior, was really there any trepidation? I remember the couple times I checked. The first time I checked the game, it was 21-6. So I thought pretty much that they had things in control, and then the Chiefs chipped away. Your overall thoughts on the win?
Yeah, the Pats were in control the whole game, no doubt about it. And the I talked about their health and I was concerned how guys were going to look. And for the most part, those guys did look healthy that we were worried about. Hightower looked a lot more like himself than he had done a few weeks ago. McCourty and Chung both looked good, so the defense played really strong. And I'm telling you, the guy that makes the biggest difference in that offense, just a different offense with him in there, is little Julian Edelman. All of a sudden, it was like the beginning of the season again with Tom getting rid of the ball in like a second and a half. The ball just coming right out. The offense getting in that nice rhythm. He just does such a good job of getting open quick, which kind of sets things up for Gronk, too, and it all comes together, even with an absolute zero running game. I mean, the leading rusher being Steven Jackson, 6 carries for 16 yards. The best run of the day being the Brady 10-yard scamper from the 11 to the 1. I mean, it was all through the air with the offense, but the offense is just so good when that ball comes out quick. And, yeah, I thought they were great. I was never worried during the game, never. I mean, okay, they closed it to 7, and Gronk caught the onside kick, and that was it. The Chiefs are a really good team, but they hung tough, but you never had the feeling that they were going to win the game. You felt like it was the Pats game all the way. So I'm feeling pretty good right now.
Cowboy, do you think that the Chiefs were maybe just over their heads? They had a great winning streak, 11 in a row, but then they faced a legit heavyweight here, and they seemed a little trepidatious. What were your thoughts on the Chiefs' performance?
I thought the Patriots won the game more than the Chiefs lost it. I mean, you know, the only thing you can point to as far as like the Chiefs had the fumble right after the half, the Nile Davis fumble that really hurt them, and then it was like a replay of the Eagles Super Bowl with the Patriots, the way the last drive of the game with the Chiefs down 2 scores and, you know, just taking their time, and mm-hmm. It was very, you know, and so that was kind of the Andy Reid poor clock management rearing its ugly head. But overall, I thought the Chiefs played their game, and I don't think they played bad by any stretch. I mean, they ran the ball well. Alex Smith played a pretty good game, but I just could concur with Senior that the Patriots offense is a lot different with Julian Edelman out there. And, you know, all year the Chiefs pass defense has been a bit of their Achilles heel. You've been able to throw on them, and I like it when the Patriots, you know, the Patriots come with a specific game plan, of course, and they're one of the few teams in the league that don't feel like they have to establish the run. They did it earlier in the year against the Jets, where they just didn't even really try to run the ball. They said, we're going to throw this game, and they looked very good. I thought they looked very good. It was a good bounce back for how poorly they've been playing, and I think it sets them up well for next week. But yeah, to answer your question, I don't think the Chiefs went out there and laid an egg. And I think that Chiefs team, the way they played, would have beat the Patriots week 17 or week 16. It was a different Patriots team.
Again, as you said, Senior, Brady looked great. 28 of 42, 302 yards, a couple touchdowns, not bad. Alex Smith threw 50 passes, which is, I don't know if that's I guess their offense has had to, you know, adjust after Charles got hurt.
Well, they were playing from behind.
Yeah.
They were playing from behind. They don't usually throw it around like that.
Right.
When you're playing from behind, you have to throw it around.
Yeah. I mean,
I said it the other day that they're a great front running team, that you don't want to let them get ahead, because then they just ground and pound, play conservative, don't turn the ball over, use their defense. It's what they do. They're a great front runner, and the Pats didn't allow them to be a front runner. Mm. That's why Alex threw 50 balls, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Julian Edelman, 10 catches, 100 yards. Very nice. Gronk had 7 catches.
Huge factor.
Yeah. What were your thoughts, Senior, on the Pats defense overall?
Oh, very good again. Very good. Very happy with the defense. I think the defense is fine. I really do. Much healthier. It's nice to see those linebackers there. I thought Chung and McCourty both looked good. A little worried about the Jamie Collins thing, but I guess he got an oblique injury at the end of the game. I mean, he's a super player. He's very valuable. But he's saying he's going to be good to go next week. So, honestly, I don't see the defense having too much trouble with next week's opponent. I think the Pats beat the tougher challenge this week. I think the Chiefs were the next best team in the AFC. So, yeah, I don't see that offense giving the Patriots too much trouble.
The one thing that gives me a little bit of pause is the Chiefs were able to run the ball, and I don't think Denver's going to come in and think they're going to win it on Peyton's arm, and their running game's been better. So I think in the game plan needs to be stop the run first and make Manning beat you. And Belichick's always game plan for Manning well, and a lot of it is, you know, beating up the receivers on the short passes, making them beat you deep. And I mean, to seniors, it seems like a really good matchup for the Patriots because all of that stuff, any of Manning's shortcomings that have been exploited in the past are really magnified with this version of Manning. And for Denver to have any chance, their defense is going to have to be lights out, I think, like really, really lights out, which is possible. They're a great team. But
although I'll tell you, I don't think their secondary looked terrific today against the Steelers. I think the Steelers were getting a lot of, without even having Antonio Brown, we're getting some guys getting quite a bit of separation. I see the Pats being able to do some work against them.
Oh, for
especially
sure.
Especially considering that the key to that, their defense is their pass rush in a lot of ways that makes their secondary look better. But with the Pats offense in the rhythm that it was in this week where the ball's coming out so quick, it almost totally negates a pass rush. So,
well, Chris,
I like the matchup on both sides of the ball.
Chris Harris is like probably the premier slot corner in the NFL, and he's dinged up. I mean, he was dinged up today, and he's going to be limited. He already said he's going to be limited next week, and that really doesn't bode well for them because he's a guy who you can't really shut Edelman down, but he's a guy who could slow him down maybe better than anyone else in the league. And if he's not at full strength, I mean, they're in big trouble. I think they're in big trouble even at home.
Mm. Cowboy, what does the offseason hold for the Kansas City Chiefs? I mean, here's a team that really did come out of nowhere this year. Went on that great winning streak, won a nice playoff game last week, and then just faced a better team yesterday. What does their offseason hold, do you think?
I think they're fine. I mean, I think, you know, they're going to get Jamaal Charles back. And, you know, I think they have a good core. And I think given this is, I mean, this is, I think, pretty clearly Peyton's last run, right? So, I mean, you have to go into next year saying the Chiefs are probably, if it's Brock Osweiler at quarterback, I mean, as the odds-on favorite to win that division. I mean, they're a good, solid team. I mean, they won 11 of 12 games to end the season. I don't think you do anything drastic. I think Reed did a good job with them. You know, you'd like to maybe get a better number two receiver than Albert Wilson, but I think that's kind of picking nits. And you like a lot of NFL teams, they go in and if Jamaal Charles is healthy, maybe things turn out differently.
Mm-hmm. So the Patriots move on, and we'll talk about them and their opponent coming up in a moment. The night game out in the desert, I got to hand it to you, Cowboy. You hit the nail on the head on this one. Senior and I kind of whiffed. The Green Bay Packers played a lot better, particularly defensively, than I think anybody thought they would, and they kept this game close. And then we had one of the most bonkers last 7 minutes of a football game and overtime I think we've ever seen in the history of the playoffs, or at least, you know, maybe top two or three moments in the history of the playoffs. Trailing 20-13 with pretty much almost no time left. And this throw, I mean, let's go back to Thanksgiving. That crazy throw, not Thanksgiving.
It was a Thursday night.
It was a Thursday night game. That crazy throw to beat the Lions, but that at least he was, you know, Aaron Rodgers planted and threw. I mean, at least he got that throw off. He almost caused rain. He almost hit the ceiling of Ford Field. But with no time left and the Cardinal front seven bearing down on him, he chucks a ball up pretty much one-legged, bootlegging, you know, running to his left. And I can't fathom how you just don't defend this. I mean, Janis made a hell of a catch after getting hosed earlier in the drive on what could have been called pass interference. And he makes the catch, two big catches on that drive, and with no time left, catches the touchdown in the end zone. Extra point ties the game. Here we go to overtime. We had a few people on our chat, guys, including my PIC, who thought that the Packers should have went for two. But then we go to overtime. Cardinals win the toss, and then another crazy throw as Carson Palmer, who kind of struggled for the most part in the game, threw a ball clear in the other across the field to a wide-open Larry Fitzgerald. Fitz runs another, 60 yards or something, gets tackled at the four, shovel pass next play, touchdown, Cardinals are hosting, or Cardinals are going to the NFC Championship with a 26-20 overtime win. Cowboy, you were right. You were right. I mean, regardless of whether, you know, statistically the Cardinals were a better team, Aaron Rodgers is just one of those guys that on his own you don't count out, regardless of who's around him. And you hit the nail on the head. But what an ending, huh? It's ridiculous.
unbelievable game. And I mean, Arizona really, specifically Palmer, really, really didn't play well. And we're very lucky to get out of there. I mean, they were lucky to be ahead. The touchdown that put them ahead was a joke. I mean, it was, the ball got tipped in the air and landed in Michael Floyd's lap. It was a really, really, probably Carson Palmer's worst performance of the season. And Rodgers, he did it by himself. It wasn't exactly what I said, because I didn't think that Green Bay could stop Arizona, but I said that Arizona's defense hasn't been playing that great, and, you know, you can't count Rodgers out of a shootout. So it wasn't exactly right. But, you know, I think that the point was that when you have a great quarterback like that, and he certainly is a great quarterback, and especially a guy who's proven he can do it in these situations, unlike Palmer, who's never done it in these situations, mm-hmm. that you can't count him out. I mean, he did it by himself. I mean, Jeff Janis had two catches all season going into the game. Mm-hmm. Randall Cobb goes down at the beginning of the game. James Jones got blanketed by Patrick Peterson the whole game and puts up a goose egg. And Rodgers did it on his own. I mean, you feel bad for Rodgers. You really do.
Right.
I mean, what the hell else does he have to do? But, I mean, Arizona, really, they have to do a 180 if they're not going to get their asses kicked in Carolina, because they played bad, and Palmer can't play like that for them to have a chance in that game. Carolina is a much, much, much better team than Green Bay.
Yes, I concur about that. I mean, he put up a lot of yards, but two picks, and yeah, it just didn't look. He didn't look solid.
I mean, the play in overtime. I mean, that was a 75-yard catch by Fitzgerald on the first play of overtime, and that was a great play by Palmer. He avoided the rush, kept it alive. They forgot to cover Fitzgerald, and that was a fantastic play. But a lot of bad decisions. I mean, the right before the touchdown pass, he had one that Sam Shields should have picked off.
Mm-hmm.
And he threw a red zone interception. I mean, he just really was off. And I really like that Cardinals team, and they are capable of turning it around. But that was ugly. I thought it was ugly on their part.
Senior, what were your thoughts on Arizona blitzing on that play? I mean, they should have just sat back and had 12 guys, you know, 9 guys in the end zone. But they wanted to put pressure on Rodgers, which they did. But then again, then it left a lot of their guys vulnerable in the end zone. What were your thoughts on McCarthy or the defensive coordinators thinking of having a blitz on that last play?
It's definitely a pretty unorthodox call, and it didn't work. You know, normally in that situation, obviously you play it safe,
right?
You know.
Of course, that's not what Arians does.
If you remember the Hail Mary that was it against Detroit on the Monday night?
Thursday night.
That was the total opposite, where they played it safe, but they all stood in the back of the end zone and didn't cover the front.
Exactly. Yeah, it was like posting up in the paint. It was
just let Richard Rodgers stand there with old guys behind him and catch the pass.
It's crazy.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's weird how this has happened. I mean, obviously, you got to give Rodgers some of the credit for it, but how these teams have allowed him to complete these Hail Marys is pretty weird. You got to admit it. About a guy having a nobody having a coming out party, huh? What a night for Jeff Janis.
Yep.
Nobody knew who he was before last night.
Nope.
But you know, in the hope of seeing a good game next week, you got to kind of hope that this might be one of those situations where, let's face it, Carson Palmer laid an egg. You know, they played against a team that really isn't a good defensive team, and their offense just didn't show up like they're supposed to. That's the biggest thing.
Right.
Maybe sometimes we've seen it in the playoffs before, where a team gets away with a bad game. You let a good team get away with a bad game and skate by, and maybe they're going to come out and play a dynamite game next week. You know, that's possible, and then we'll have a great championship game. And then Green Bay's, you know, I guess you got to give some of the credit to the Green Bay defense that we overachieved, because They did really shut David Johnson down also, and he's been really effective. And I think he only averaged about if 3 yards a carry, 2. Maybe 3. Something. Yeah,
15
so
15 carries, 35 yards last night.
Yeah, so great job they did on him. I mean, Arizona, yeah, they laid an egg. They played an awful game. Not too often you can lay an egg in the playoffs, play way below your capabilities, and be playing the following week.
Yep.
So
yep.
Maybe they'll take advantage of the opportunity because we know they can play a lot better than that. We know this could be a good game, could be a real good game.
Cowboys should. Oh, go
ahead. Talk about the blitzing. The case for – I think it was the right call. The case for blitzing there is that you don't allow what happened in Detroit. You don't give them time. You don't give the receivers time to get to the end zone. And, I mean, I think if you told Arians you're going to blitz, Rodgers is going to sprint backwards and on the dead run while he's getting tackled, heave it up off his back foot into double coverage. I mean – What do you want?
Going to be okay. Yeah.
What do you want? I mean, I think he's literally the only quarterback in the NFL who could make that play.
Yeah.
I mean, if you watch that throw in slow motion, he wasn't even looking, and it was off his back foot on the dead run.
Right.
I mean, it was perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's an amazing guy, no doubt about it.
Would Cowboys should the Packers have gone for two and try to win the game?
It's a tough call. If you don't make it, you're really sticking it to your team. I mean, honestly, if I was coaching, I would have let Rodgers talk me into it. if he wanted to, it was, the way the overtime rules are now. With the old overtime rules, it makes more sense. With the, you know, you have to give up the field goal, but their defense had played well and it kept them on. I mean, they didn't really give up, like, the last touchdown wasn't a legitimate touchdown. You know, it was a batted ball. Like I said, the defense had played well, and you don't know you're going to lose the toss. I mean, you got to give your. I agree with not going for two. I mean, I think, you know, hindsight's 20/20. You assume your defense can hold them out of the end zone if you lose the toss. I think there's a better chance, better chance of outcomes, right? Than just putting the game on just one play like that. You can win the toss or you can stop them. The only way you don't see the ball is if what happened.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and as a coach, McCarthy making that decision, in all honesty, the fact that he did it the way he did and his team lost, he's not taking any heat for that. If he would have went for two and didn't convert, he'd be taking a lot of heat. It really takes balls. I think it's got to make plays to do things like that. Even though you're an underdog, and part of it makes sense when you're an underdog to give it a try, you really have to have a lot of a super sense of security as a coach. A guy like Belichick will do crazy things once in a while because he doesn't care because – he's got nothing. He's not worried about his job or anything else or what anybody says or like what Nick Saban did in the tie game, kicking onside.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think a lot of coaches don't have the self security to do that. Where if you're Nick Saban or Bill Belichick, you know you're not worried about your job. You're not worried about anything else. You're just doing what you think is best in that situation. You're not worried. Oh, what's going to go over worse? It really takes balls to do the thing that. If it doesn't work out, you're going to take a lot more heat for.
Right.
Like, no doubt, if in that game, if Clemson recovers that onside kick, marches upfield and goes ahead 24-17 and wins the game, Saban would have taken some heat for that.
Yep.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Absolutely no doubt about it. So, and he knows that. It's a ballsy thing to do. But he's so secure in his position, just like Belichick or – you know, certain guys, and I'm not saying Mike McCarthy shouldn't be secure, but he's not that secure.
Right.
You know, and so most guys aren't going to do the thing that they're going to take a lot of heat for if they fail. You play it safe. If you fail, well, nobody blames you, you know.
Asking same question I asked in the previous game, Cowboy, what does the offseason hold for the Packers? Obviously, Jordy Nelson will be back. But is that all that is that all that's needed? What you know?
I think they just need to get healthy and they need to keep Eddie Lacy away from the buffet table. They're a good team. I mean, they could use a little help on defense, and they can address that through free agency and the draft. But I think what happened to their offense this year is a testament to how good. And I will give a give my father credit for this, because he always says that Jordy Nelson is a guy, you know, he's a guy who is looked at as somebody who his quarterback makes him great, and maybe he's not great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you put him on another team and he's not as good or whatever. But I think, I mean, he showed their offense was out of sync all year. Randall Cobb was a shell. Was a complete, I mean, this is a guy who's like a lot of people think like a top 15 receiver in the league, was just putrid all season when he had to be the number one. So getting Jordy Nelson back healthy, that team is going to look a lot more like the team you saw 2 years ago. And, you know, with all that said, even, I mean, basically it was like about everything that could possibly go wrong for Green Bay this year went wrong. And they still, you know, took Arizona overtime in the conference semifinals. So they'll be back with a vengeance.
Mm.
Thanks for the pat on the back, Cowboy. I didn't even remember that. I've told you in years past that when people look at who's the top four or five receivers in the league, that nobody ever says Jordy Nelson, and I always thought he was.
Mm.
He's a really good player. He really is.
And it showed this season that he's a really good player, because the Packers certainly missed him.
Getting him back is going to solve a lot of their offensive woes.
Yeah.
You know, the supporting cast around them. Okay, Cobb is okay. He's decent, but I mean, come on. Poor Aaron is dealing James Jones, a guy who's couldn't even make other teams.
The Giants. He got
Devontae Adams.
I mean, he had balls going through, and Adams had balls going through his arms pretty much all season.
These guys are stiffs. Yeah. You know, he had nothing to work with. Yeah. So
let's go to today. And our early game pretty much was a tale of two games. And as we talked about on the show last week, many considered this almost like the early Super Bowl of the playoffs. The defending NFC champions, the Seattle Seahawks, march into Charlotte to take on the number one overall seed in the league, the 15-1 Carolina Panthers. And this was pretty much a tale of two games. The first half, the Seahawks were an absolute mess. Russell Wilson's running for his life, throws a couple picks. One gets walked back by Kukli for a touchdown. It was ugly. And Carolina was just having their way on offense. Jonathan Stewart almost had 100 yards at halftime. 31-0 at the half, Carolina was leading. And I laughed because the Fox halftime show, Grizzly Bradshaw there was like, he pretty much was telling people to turn the game off. That's good. You're on your own network. Shut it off. Wait till the other game comes on, which is kind of ridiculous. But fortunately, most people didn't, because the second half, I don't want to say Ron Rivera kind of put the cruise button on and sat back and waited, but it seemed like that. But suddenly, the Seahawk offense came to life. Russell Wilson threw three touchdowns. Kurse made a nice catch. Lockett made a great catches. If that game had five more minutes in the half, I think the Panthers may not be the ones playing next week. Senior, first off, what the hell happened in the first half? And what did the Panthers do, or what did the Seahawks do at halftime?
Yeah, jeepers. It's hard to say. You know, they just came out and started playing like the Seahawks. They were really flat in the first half, and that's a hard thing to explain, because they're a really good team. The Panthers' defense completely shut them down, and they couldn't stop the run, which is very unusual for them. You know, if Cam would have been throwing all over them, or Cam would have been taking off and running, but to have Jonathan Stewart run on them like that, I mean, they've been really stout against the run this year. I don't think there's a better run defense in football than the Seahawks. So at points this year, the Legion of Boom, especially the first half of the year, wasn't what they used to be, but even then, they were stopping the run. So it's really hard to explain, but certainly the second half, I give part of it a credit to Russell Wilson's leadership. You saw him coming out of the locker room saying, now's the time. He never wavered. He never looked like he was giving up, and the team picked up on it, and they really came out. The offense came out looking great in the second half. He looked great. Mm. I don't think Lynch was much of a factor at any point in the game, but then again, you get behind 31-0 and you kind of take your running back out of the game. But yeah, Russell played great, and the Legion of Boom stepped up and just shut them right down in the second half. Not then they started stopping the run, and Cam really didn't get that much done in the game. You know, really nothing special at all. Of course, again, the way the game went, he was able to play conservative in the second half. But you know, the decision not to kick a field goal when they were down 31-0 on 4th and 5. As the game turned out, might have been another bad Pete Carroll decision. You know, I don't know if that 3 points would have made a difference, but there were points in the fourth quarter where I was saying, "My God, you know, if they had that 3 points now, it would be looking a lot. It would be looking different." Mm. Then they missed the field goal at the end of the first half too. They just kept kind of fading to the right and just missed
just
by
missed.
Hoshka.
Yep.
Yeah, so you have those 6 points, and then it's a different game. You know, so.
First field goal.
I mean, they're
missed.
A really good team. They went down showing some pride. Yeah. No doubt. They didn't go limping off, getting blown out. They're still the Seahawks. They can keep their heads up. And somebody had to win the game. You know, it was two great teams. Somebody had to win. It was just a really weird game.
Yeah.
The fact that it ended out close doesn't surprise me. The way it ended out close obviously really surprises you. You know.
First field.
Now, Cowboy kind of had his finger all over Carolina. How did you feel about it, Cowboy?
Yeah, I mean. I told you I liked Carolina by double digits. Didn't end up happening, but I still feel like it was the correct call. given the game flow. Mm. They're a great team. They're a great team. They are clearly, at least to me, clearly the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl. As a Pats fan, assuming that I'm thinking the Patriots are going to win, I am rooting hard for Arizona. Because I think the Patriots match up terribly to Carolina. They do all the things well that give the Patriots problems. And sometimes it's just something clicks with a team, and it's just their year. And they have the nobody believes in us, because, I mean, even when they were undefeated, people weren't giving them a lot of credit. And, I mean, they're fantastic. Really good defense, really opportunistic defense, as you saw today. And Cam has developed into a great quarterback and a great leader, which you saw today. You saw him in the defensive huddle in the fourth quarter talking to the guys. And, I mean, he's, you know, they're just a great team. And I was surprised it was 31-0. But I wasn't surprised that they came out and dominated. And I think, you know, say your statisticians don't believe in momentum and yada, yada, yada. And I get that. But it's tough to keep your foot on the gas at 31-0. I mean, and, you know, the game plan completely changes. You're just trying to take time off the clock, right? Tick, tick, tick. And, you know, it ended out 31-24. Seattle did everything they possibly could have in the second half, and the game was a 7-point game. And Carolina, you know, I mean, Carolina probably doesn't feel great about the way they played in the second half. But it was effective. They won the game. And they took the air out of the ball. You know, I think if the game flow was different, the Cam and those guys, I mean, they could have stood back. He could have put up another 20 points in the second half if he had to. It was just they're a great team. They really are. And I was very impressed. And like Senior said, you kind of thought that Wilson would make it. If there's one guy in the league with no quit in him, it's that guy who can engineer something like that. And I mean, he's got that magic. He's shown it 1,000 times before. It's just, you know, it wasn't their year. They just, you know, the things that make them great weren't as, you know, the defense wasn't as good this year. It just wasn't as good. Marshawn Lynch, their running game was non-existent this year. And I mean, it was a great year for Seattle for Russell Wilson's development, because he went from a guy, you know, a guy who would make a few great plays a game on a run first team to a guy who was the best quarterback in the NFL over the second half of the season on a team that had no choice but to throw the ball the whole game. And I think ultimately this year is going to be a positive for him going forward. But they just ran into a juggernaut. On their home field, they weren't going to win the game.
So, again, as I've kind of gone into a pattern here, is there anything, I'll ask you first, Senior, is there anything in the offseason that the Seahawks would need to do to improve?
Jeepers, you know, there's definitely no major weakness on the team. If Rawls is the guy, I would say no, because I got a feeling Lynch isn't coming back. So, you know, maybe you could get another young running back. Mm. There's really not a lot of weaknesses in the Seahawks
really,
team.
Yeah.
That's for sure. You know, you look at the wide for a quarterback who's as dynamic as Wilson. Maybe the wide receivers aren't great, but they're not bad. Lockett looks like he's going to be a really good player. You know?
He made some great catches today.
Oh, Baldwin.
Baldwin had a great year.
Yeah, great. Very good.
So, you know, yeah.
I think those top three guys, Kearse, Baldwin, Lockett, all studs. I mean,
maybe try and get one of those, you know, get somebody that could be a big time tight end. Could
they have Jimmy Graham? Something.
That's right. Yeah, big receiving to have. Get him healthy. Yeah, so what does that team need? I mean, that's all they need to do is be healthy, right? I mean, what are they? There's no what weakness is there in the Seahawks? What would you look to address if you were the Seahawks? I don't know.
I mean, I don't know who's a free agent or if they got to do anything with money fiscally or. I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the story is.
I don't
with
either. Yeah, I don't
with
either.
The cap. Yeah, but I mean, as far as looking at their team that they have coming back, my God, you're a Super Bowl contender. There's no doubt about it. You're coming back with that Seahawks team. You look for a weakness and you can't find it. Obviously, it's a very good defense. It's a very good offense. Your quarterback's just getting better. You know, he's one of the premier quarterbacks. He is elite. He's got that word. No doubt about it. And that's such an important thing to have a quarterback that's that good.
I mean, here's
surrounded by a lot of talent. They're a really, really good team.
I mean, here's an interesting stat that as I'm kind of perusing the numbers here. Inside the numbers, quarterback hits. Caroline had 14 hits on Russell Wilson. Seahawk defense, number of hits on Cam Newton, 1.
Yeah, we didn't throw. He didn't throw the ball a lot.
A lot of that was they weren't throwing.
Right.
But that's you know if that is
ran it down their throats.
The Seahawks offensive line was shitty all season, and if there's a weakness on the team, it is their offensive line. Wilson, if you remember, through the first 8 weeks,
that's right,
was on pace to break the sack record for the amount of times he's been sacked.
Right.
And so you address the offensive line. I think Rawls is the real deal. So if he comes back healthy, I don't think there's any need to pay Lynch. I think he's probably better than Lynch right now. And healthy Jimmy Graham, and then Carroll needs to figure out a way to use Jimmy Graham, because even when he was healthy, I mean, frankly, the offense played better without him, which shouldn't be the case. The guy's a dynamic player. You figure out you have a weapon like that, you figure out how to use him. And he should, in theory, open up things for guys like Baldwin and Lockett even more. By busting up the seam, leaving those guys one-on-one on the outside.
Mm. Now, the fact that their offense played better without Graham, Raj, one of the things, like when I was trying to think of an issue that they needed to take care of, and then you came up with the offensive line, the way they played the last 7 or 8 games of the season, like after Graham was out, you almost kind of forgot about that because the offensive line did play better. Wilson was kept a lot cleaner. I mean, he was getting killed in the first half of the season. They did a much better job in – maybe something to do with that is having a tight end that can block.
Yeah, Graham can't
block
at all.
As good as Graham is, Graham's more of a, let's face it, he's more of a big wide receiver than he is a tight end. You know what I mean? He's not a pure tight end. He doesn't do much for you on the blocking end.
Not at all. They were trying to do the round peg into a square hole or however that goes. By they were leaving him in to block a lot.
Yeah, and he's useless. And
with not very good results.
Yeah.
And the final game of the day that ended shortly before we started recording, in a game that had not one, not two, but 8 field goals. So let's do the math. 25 of the 39 points in this game were scored through the uprights off somebody's foot. We will get probably the final chapter of maybe this generation's storied rivalry of two great quarterbacks as the Denver Broncos hung on for a 23-16 win over the Steelers. And we had a big fumble late, Bronco touchdown, and then a great defensive stand by the Broncos. We talked about the fact that both quarterbacks came in with gimpy shoulders. And I agree with you, Senior, that second half, we were talking off air, Ben Roethlisberger's throws weren't horrific. I mean, some were, but some weren't. Looked like he had a little zip. I didn't see a lot of zip in any of Peyton's throws, but What won this game? I mean, obviously it was defense. It was really the Bronco defense played very well. As you said, secondary had its moments. But, Senior, your overall thoughts on the Broncos' performance, both offensively and in particular defensively?
Yeah, I mean, their defense played good, but it was a depleted Steelers offense that they were going
against. Exactly.
Right. That's,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have arguably the best receiver in football out there. You didn't have anything at running back, you know. I mean, this was a team that had Le'Veon Bell, then D'Angelo Williams. Now they had Toussaint, who there's the play of the game right there, right? The Toussaint fumble was definitely the turning point of the game that really led to the Broncos' victory. So I wasn't that impressed with their defense. I'm telling you, these so-so receivers were getting some separation. He had some open guys to throw to. Their pass rush is good. But, again, Ben had some decent time. And Ben's defense, Ben's shoulder looked a lot better than I thought. He did have some zip on his pass, and maybe it was the contrast from watching the ducks that Peyton was throwing up there where Ben looked like he had a lot of zip, you know. But, yeah, I wasn't that impressed with either team, to be honest with you. You know, I think the if I'm the Broncos, I'd be sending lunatic Vontaze Burfict the thank you card. But I think if Antonio Brown was in that game, they might have won. I mean, for one thing, having him for punt returns would have helped. Luckily, what Wheaton was doing back there didn't end out hurting him. He had a couple of near disasters back there, and. Yeah, the way I saw guys getting separation, I think Brown would have been running free out there. And now you got Martavis as not the guy that's getting the most attention. He's that number two receiver, and it makes him better. And yeah, I think just having Brown in the game, I don't think Denver wins this game if Antonio Brown plays. As far as their offense goes, yeah, okay, they can run the ball a bit. But he's a rag arm. I mean, most of his passes were within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. You know, he's trying to throw it anywhere deeper than that downfield. Number one, the ball takes forever to get there, and the defensive backs have time to adjust, and it's not a great defensive backfield that Pittsburgh's throwing at him. That's for sure. They're awful. Or else he's real inaccurate throwing it down the field. I mean, he's not the guy he used, not even close, not even a shell of what he used to be. I mean,
right.
We're saying it's the rematch of these two great quarterbacks. Well, look at the year Peyton had before he went down, when he had the game with 5 picks. He was effing horrible. That team was riding strictly on their defense they were winning with. And Tom, on the other side, became the oldest quarterback in history to lead the NFL in touchdown passes. Really had a great year, despite the fact that his team went through all kinds of injuries and his receiving core and everything else. If you look at his numbers are absolutely fabulous. And look at how he played this week. There's no doubt who has the edge at that position next week. It's not even close. I really wasn't impressed with Denver. I mean, I know they have a good defense, but I think it's beatable. And no, then their offense doesn't put any fear in your heart at all. That does not look like a team that's going to the Super Bowl to me.
To me, yeah. I mean, just same old Broncos offense, right? It's the same offense they've trotted out there all season, which is, you know, don't turn the ball over. They didn't turn the ball over. That was good. The decent running game. I don't think it's a great running game by any stretch. Really good receivers with a guy who has a lot of trouble getting him the ball. And this is, I mean, they've been winning ugly all year. I mean, and they, you know, to their credit, they won ugly to the number one seed. So you do, you know, they're not a bad team by any stretch, but there's no resurgence or anything from Peyton Manning. Did he look better than he did earlier in the season? Yes, but marginally, in my opinion. He had a couple of passes that should have been picked where guys were jumping the routes because, to Senior's point, the ball takes so long to get there. And, I mean, if Osweiler was even decent, he would be playing quarterback. I thought they might go to him at halftime when they were behind. Given how poorly the offense played in the first half, and that style that they played today isn't going to get it done against the Patriots unless there's a friggin' blizzard or something. I mean, they're going to have to come out and score some points if they want to beat the Patriots. I would go so far as to say, even without, I mean, because Martavis Bryant gave you a pretty good Antonio Brown impression. He had 160 yards, I believe. And, you know, he was all over the place, another 40 on reverse. He filled in the Antonio Brown role, but they really, really missed D'Angelo. So not even Le'Veon Bell, but if D'Angelo Williams was healthy, I think they would have won this game. Because Toussaint, obviously, that fumble, you don't want to say it cost them the game because they, you know, they were moving. It was a really bad fumble, but then the defense choked by giving up a 70-yard touchdown drive after the fumble. But if they could have gotten anything at all from their running backs, I think they would have won the game. It was really, I mean, the game was there for the Steelers for the taking, and then they just couldn't do it. They're too banged up. But yeah, it's just. It was such a difference between the other three games, because in the other three games, it was all good football teams, right? It was all two good football teams playing against each other, and in this game, it was like an average team against a bad team, or an average team against an injured team, and it's just especially since it was last after watching the other three games. Mm-hmm. You could really see the contrast. It really just felt like the teams were not as good as the other teams that you had seen play this weekend.
Exactly. It held your interest because it was close and competitive, but it wasn't high quality. That's absolutely true.
Senior, has been, as we look to the offseason again for the team that lost, as continuing our discussion of the teams whose seasons ended this weekend, what is the future for the Steelers? Ben is now concluding his, 11th season? And the last few years, he's taken a real beating. Is he breaking down, do you think?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think he's a big, tough, strong guy, and he'll come back. Mm-hmm. I still think he's got some good football left in him. Their offense is really good, you know. They're coming back with a good offense. What they need to do is address the other side of the ball. You know, you got to be able to play defense. You got to be able to stop teams from throwing all over you, and especially in today's NFL. I mean, basically, their philosophy this year was to try to win shootouts every week, you know, because their offense was really good, but their defense was terrible. So that's the future for the Steelers. They need to shore up the defense. I'm not saying they have been for like 8 more years or anything, but for the immediate future, the next couple of years, they're fine with Ben. I mean, they got every weapon you can possibly want on offense. They just totally have to address the defense. I mean, it's the Steelers' image, you know. You think of the Steelers' teams, and you always think of a real rugged, tough defensive team, and this team doesn't fit that on the defensive end. Their offense is really good, but yeah, they have to address the defense entirely, you know.
Yeah, they're... I don't think he's really breaking down. I mean, he tends to miss a game or two every year. I mean, he had a couple, like one of the injuries this year. I mean, he got hit low, you know, he got hit low on an, in- I mean, that hit earlier in the season looked like it was going to put him out for the season. I mean, he's a tough guy, and that often, I mean, it's all about health for the other guys. I mean, if they're healthy, they're the best offense in football. And I don't even think it's that close, maybe Arizona, but I mean, they probably have best receiver and the best running back in the NFL.
Right.
So they'll be back, and their defense sucks. So to senior's point, they need to go get a corner or two, and they need to go get a real backup quarterback in case Ben does get hurt.
So we are down to four, and why don't we talk about it now? And this works out for you, Cowboy, because you get to watch this game and the Royal Rumble and not have to overlap. Aren't you lucky?
I'll have two TVs on for the Rumble, my friend. I won't be missing.
Oh, I know, but I mean, come on, let's be honest. It'd be a little different. It's one thing to have two TVs on, and then the other game, and the game is two teams that you kind of care about. It's another thing if it's your team and they're playing for the Super Bowl. That's all I'm saying. Of course, you're gonna watch the game. I understand. I'm just saying that it's a little different. Let's go to Denver. The final probably the final chapter of a fantastic rivalry. These two teams, of course, met, 2 years ago in the AFC Championship in Denver. Peyton won, and then the Broncos flew to the Meadowlands and got torched. So I'm going to give each of you guys one side versus the other side and break it down for me. Cowboy, Broncos offense versus Patriots defense. What do you think?
What do I think is going to happen? What do I think the Broncos offense needs to do?
What are your thoughts?
Which one?
Break it down any way you like. Broncos offense versus Pat's defense.
So if I'm the Broncos offense, you got to run the ball. They have to run the ball because they have a quarterback who's got no arm. Try to do the short passing thing. It doesn't generally work very well against Belichick, a Belichick coach defense. But the Patriots have to concentrate on stopping the run. If they can stop the run, I don't think Denver's going to be able to do much of anything on offense. From Denver's point of view, touchdowns, not field goals. If you're in the red zone, you can't kick field goals against the Patriots. You have to get touchdowns because the Patriots are going to put up touchdowns. And what I think is going to happen is I see Denver's offense playing like it did today, where the 20 to 24 points is probably where they're going to land. And we'll let Senior tell you if that's going to be enough.
All right, Senior. Pat's offense versus Broncos defense. Break it down.
Well, yeah, the Patriots offense, you look at what the strength of that defense is, and that's the pass rush, and how do you offset that? Same thing they did to the Chiefs' pass rush this week. Same thing that's been their secret in their early winning streak this season before guys started going down. Tom's getting the ball out quicker than any other quarterback in the NFL gets it out, and it works because we have Julian out there. Julian gets open quick. Now he's getting attention, and that allows Gronk to run down the seam and do the things he does. We mix in some James White and our other receivers. Against this Denver pass rush, which is a lot from the outside too, you might see them even, doing a little more on the ground than they did last week. Maybe, some delays and draws and stuff just to keep them off balance. And I don't see what I saw from that Denver defense today, I don't see them stopping the Patriots. They might slow them down a little bit, but I see the Pats getting 30 plus points in this game.
They don't have
an answer for Gronkowski either. Their corners are really, really good, but I mean, Tlaib, he's going to be on LaFell, right? So he's going to take LaFell out of the game. Who cares?
Big deal.
That's
if Tlaib doesn't get hurt during the game. He tends to go down during big games.
Genius.
He's a dog.
AFC title game in Denver, right?
That's right. He's a dog when it comes to the big time. You know what I think of Tlaib.
Yeah, he's a great player. But it's just he's a great player who his strengths, it doesn't matter. It's a bad matchup for the Broncos in a lot of ways. Because when you have a shutdown corner, but the Patriots don't, unless they want to, they can. I mean, they could put him on Gronkowski and Gronk will eat him alive. It's the Patriots don't really have an outside receiver that you have to stop.
Could the Broncos make those adjustments?
I don't think so. No. I don't see it. I honestly don't see it. I was worried about this week's game. I will be shocked if the Pats lose this game. I'll be completely shocked. I honestly think that the Pats are going to roll on these guys.
Yeah. I mean, for the Broncos to win, you're going to need some, weather. Weather could do it. It's weather or, turnovers, fumble kickoffs, things like that. That can always do it. They need to, on the other side, if they can keep the pass out of the end zone and keep Gostkowski kicking field goals, the Denver's, there's a lot more paths to victory for the Patriots. For Denver to win, they kind of have to win ugly against a team that's tough to win ugly against.
I like the wording of that. The Patriots are a tough team to win ugly against.
And I mean, if you want to see a decent Super Bowl, you should root for the Patriots because Denver would get absolutely destroyed by either one of those teams, whereas the Pats have a chance because of their offense.
Right, right. Speaking of those, all right, well, give me finals. What's your score, Senior?
31-17.
Okay.
Patriots, obviously.
Cowboy?
27-21.
24-10.
There you go. I like that.
There you go. Giving the Pats defense a lot of credit.
I am.
Pats have a good defense, and Denver's offense isn't too
scary. I
don't see them getting that much done.
Yeah, I mean, if
that's not outrageous.
What I think the Pats are going to do is they're going to play exactly. I agree with you. I think you said senior. I think the Pats are going to do what they did against Kansas City, jump out to an early lead. If Peyton's got to throw, if you phase out the Bronco running game, and Peyton's got to throw like his usual,
they're
screwed. Because by the fourth quarter, he'll be throwing left-handed. So. Yep. So
after you might play from behind, it's over. Yeah.
You might see Osweiler in this game. I could see that. He beat the Patriots already this year. Mm. And that's another thing. Obviously, that game, that wasn't that long ago, and that was in Denver. If something were to happen to Gronkowski or Edelman, that changes the whole dynamic, and that's what happened in that game.
Right.
Yeah, obviously, that you try and make predictions on a game, and you can't predict injuries. Injuries would change everything, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, injuries you can't predict, obviously. So, all right, let's go to the night game, which is this is gonna be a lot of fun because you've got two teams, incredibly talented, two different kinds of coaches, two quarterbacks coming, who came off kind of nondescript performances. One played level, the other played awful. Senior, you go first this time. Cardinals offense versus Panthers defense.
Well, you know, if we see the normal Cardinals offense, they can definitely get some things done. They're such a multifaceted offense. If Carson's playing well, the three wide receivers are all threats. You know, Brown is a really good deep threat. Floyd's just a really good receiver, and Fitzgerald is Fitzgerald. So they can put some pressure on that. Mm. On the Carolina secondary, no doubt. And Johnson can get some stuff done running, too, because Carolina's a great defense with the strength being those linebackers. So, yeah, they're probably going to be hard to run on. But if Carson plays like he did against Green Bay, obviously all bets are off. But, yeah, if Carson's himself, I can see them getting some scoring done and ending out the game scoring in the 20s. I can clearly see Arizona getting to the 20s, and that might not be enough to win, but it might be too. So
okay,
yeah, they have a shot to get some stuff done against that defense, definitely.
Okay, Cowboy, flip the coin: Panthers offense versus Cardinal defense. What do you think?
So I think it's a similar situation to what Denver faces in that the Cardinals have a shutdown corner with nobody to shut down. So obviously you watch the Panthers, and the guys who do the least on their offense are the receivers. So Patrick Peterson, I mean, he'll probably take Ginn out of the game. Big deal. I see Carolina being able to they're a great offense, and the Cardinals have a very good defense, but not a great defense. I think Carolina's going to be able to run on them and do what they do. I think Olsen's going to have a big game. I think Cam's going to have a big game. I think Olsen's going to have a really, really good game. That's my key to victory for the Panthers is Olsen matched up with those linebackers. No Tyrann Mathieu is a huge, huge loss. I said it last week. I'll say, I mean, it's just a really, really big loss for them. I think they'll be able to get a lot of work done against Arizona.
Yeah, you are right there, Cowboy. There were some games this year that I watched Arizona, and I thought that the Honey Badger was the best player on the field. I mean, he's a really dynamic player.
But he can do a lot of different things. And, I mean, one of them is blitz. And, I mean, you know, so, I mean, if you want somebody to make Cam uncomfortable or, you know, that can chase Cam down, I mean, he can do that. He's a guy who can cover Greg Olsen, too, in the middle. I mean, he's just, it's a different defense without him. But I also think Arizona's offense is going to play very well in this game. I know you said Carolina's Achilles heel on defense has been the run defense. I think they're in the bottom half of the league. So I think David Johnson has a good game. And Norman's the best cornerback in the league. So he'll take away – he'll probably play a side because there's no one to really fight. He doesn't. Fitzgerald plays all in the slot now, and Norman doesn't play in the slot, so he'll just play a side. So whoever's on his side, Carson's going to go the other way, and It's going to a really, really fun game. I'll save my prediction, but I think this is going to be an all-timer.
I think so, too. I think let's talk about the coaches in a game like this. Ron Rivera, like we said, you know, jumped out to a big lead, played very conservative in the second half. Like we said, Bruce Arians is the kind of guy that could throw anything but the kitchen sink. I think he could make other coaches uncomfortable. That's why I'm not sure who I would want to see. What would be a more fun game facing the Patriots? Carolina, who may top to bottom have the better team, or Arizona, who has the better coach? Because I think Bruce Arians would be the kind of guy that would make, and you guys might disagree because you know them better than I do. Bruce Arians might be the kind of coach that makes Belichick a little uncomfortable because he's not a conservative thinker when it comes to coaching. But on paper, a lot of people do feel that Carolina's a better team. So that says neither here nor there. We'll get more into that next week. If it came down to coaching, a coaching decision, Senior, who would you trust?
Well, obviously, if you're going to say you're going to come down to coaching, I think Bruce Arians is one of the best in the business. I would, if the Super Bowl is that matchup, then you would call it the best coaching matchup you could have, right? I think they're the two best coaches in the NFL. Mm. I have a lot of respect for Bruce Arians. Nothing bad about Riverboat Ron. An interesting thing, though, that where you and Cowboy have both pointed out how Carolina played today in the second half. And yet, when they came out of halftime, the sideline reporter who said, I don't know which sideline reporter it was, but I just remember the report, who said they had just spoken to Arians as he was coming out, not Arians, Riverboat Ron, as he was coming out of the locker room. And he said, we're not going to sit on this lead. We're going to try to build on this lead. I reminded my team of what happened against the Giants this year where, I forget how far they
35-7.
Had a big lead.
If, it was 35-7.
Yeah, and they let it slip away and almost lost the game. So you can't take your foot off the gas pedal. And then they did play conservative. But then again, if you think of it, their game plan was pretty conservative in the first half, too. They scored all those points without really having to open it up. It was mostly just Stewart running the ball for the most part. You know, there was so did they play conservative, or did Seattle's defense just step up and stop what they were doing? Did they kind of do the same thing and it just wasn't producing results anymore? You know, so
right.
But definitely, if you want to say, if it comes down to coaching, I don't think there's any doubt that Arians is one of the best in the business, and I would give him the coaching edge over Riverboat Ron. How do you feel, Cowboy?
Yeah, I mean, Arians is a great coach. Rivera is a really good coach, too, and he's generally not conservative. I mean, hence the nickname. You know, he used to be conservative and take all sorts of heat for it, and, you know, a couple of years ago, he just started, you know, I think they go for it on fourth down more than anybody in the whole NFL. Mm. I guess having a guy like Newton makes that decision a little bit easier. But, yeah, Arians, as far as in-game strategy and as far as really going for the throat and being, you know, being willing to make those decisions that you were talking about earlier, Dad, about, you know, the pass he threw that Collinsworth was destroying him for against the Packers, where they threw the incomplete pass and left Rodgers the extra time.
Right.
That was one of those decisions. He tried to win the game on that play. And I think, you know, and I think if he had it to do over, he would do it again. It's just the kind of the way he coaches. But they're both very, very good coaches. And, you know, Arians, I think, is the second best coach in the league, and Rivera's in the top 10. Mm. So I don't think you're going to see any big coaching gaffes or anything decide this game.
Okay. All right, Cowboy, give me a score.
38-35, Panthers in overtime.
Senior,
I think it's going to be. I think right from the jump. I don't think there's going to be a huge comeback or anything like that. I think right from the jump, both of these offenses are going to be clicking, and neither team's going to be able to stop the other. And Carolina, it's just they're going to kind of whoever has the ball last wins, and Cam's going to engineer that. But Arizona is going to go down fighting. I think this is a great, great. Everybody was looking forward to Carolina, Seattle. And I think on paper, when you know, kind of like styles make fights in boxing, I don't see any way that this isn't just an awesome, awesome game. I think Palmer got that out of his system. He obviously had some sort of jitters. You know, he looked like a different guy, and he's a veteran. He got it out of his system. I think they're both going to come out guns blazing, yeah. And it's just going to be up and down. A lot of fun. I mean, so kind of similar to the Seattle-Arizona game from the regular season that Arizona won. We're just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. I can't wait. It's a much – it's going to be a much more fun game to watch than the AFC game.
And this – I mean, it was Carson's first playoff game since 2009. You know, he definitely – I think he definitely shook it off too. Senior?
Okay, well, my biggest hope is that when they kick the ball off for this game, I am in a really, really good mood. And I'm psyched to enjoy. I agree with Cowboy. I really think this is going to be a fun game. If the real Arizona team shows up, and you can't imagine that they're not going to show up 2 weeks in a row. Mm. I think it's a great game. And, okay, I'm going to say very, very close, just like Cowboy did, but I'll go the other way. I'll say 31-28 Arizona. Get down to the nitty-gritty in a close game, and the guy with the experience that hasn't done it yet, Carson, comes up with a big drive at a key time with all his weapons that he has to work with and wins the game. But it certainly could go either way. But if I have to make a pick, I'm going to go with the Cardinals in a close, very interesting game, 31-28. That's the way I'm
going
to lean.
All right, I'm going to break the tie, I think, on a late – Panthers interception as Carson Palmer's going down the field. I don't know who will make it, but there will be a big defensive play, whether it be a fumble or a pick, and the Panthers will preserve a 34-28 win, and Carolina goes to the Super Bowl. It was a fun weekend, guys. Four fun games, and I think we're going to have two fun games next week. Well, I don't know how fun the AFC Championship. I agree with Cowboy. I think from a scheduling perspective, Fox got very lucky. CBS is going to have kind of an uglier, much uglier game than. And I'm not even talking about ugly like blowout. I'm just talking ugly in general.
I know, you know what? But as far as getting a national audience, Scott, they're going to hype up the Brady Manning thing so much that they'll have plenty. They'll get great ratings.
Oh, they will. Too. Absolutely. I'm just saying. But like we said, I think this game is going to have. It's going to be much more fun from beginning to end. So, guys, let's take a very quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk a little college hoops from the weekend. A lot of ranked teams went down, including, I mean, we talk about, poor Friars lose to Seton Hall, but another top five team took it on the chin at home on Saturday. Or they actually survived, I should say. They actually survived, almost lost, but almost, it was a very close game. We'll talk about my man Deontay and an update on what Cowboys got going on over the Cardi's watching in Boston. So, Sports Evolution, more.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place for Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceForNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscullo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Senior, the Kings of Sport led by Live Audio Wrestling's Godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickerstaff, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Team's Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Welcome back, Place to Be Nation, to the Sports Evolution. Scott Griscola and the Cowboys, senior and junior. If you've been listening, and obviously you have, you're all set for next Sunday. You can listen to this episode as much as you want this week to get you ready for Pats Broncos at 3 o'clock, and then Cardinals Panthers at 6:40. Of course, the Pats will be on CBS, and of course, the game will be on Fox. Let's talk a little college hoops, and it's been a kind of a fascinating weekend. Yesterday we had a lot of close games involving ranked teams. Of course, as mentioned, unfortunately the Friars, down 10 at the half, tried to come back but fell 81-72 to, I didn't realize this good, a Seton Hall team. You guys watched, you were there. What happened, senior?
Well, first of all, props to Seton Hall, really. You know, if for people who have watched a lot of Seton Hall this year, I've seen them a few times. There's no in-between with these guys. They play awful sometimes, or they're very, very good. And we caught the very, very good version of Seton Hall. Because the Friars couldn't make shots, but that's been an issue with them in a number of games. And somehow they pull them out, usually because they just keep clawing at you. And they made several runs, and Seton Hall just wouldn't crack. In the first half, I was so impressed with Seton Hall's transition, fast breaks, just unbelievable. Even off made baskets, they were just flying up court and beating the Friars, who do hustle back, and making perfect passes, hitting guys in full stride. They shot the ball real well the whole game. They really, when they had to use the clock, they broke down the Friar defense, took the ball to the basket, always got quality shots. They made them. They made their free throws at a great clip. I think they only missed like 3 or 4 free throws the whole game.
Yep.
They out-rebounded the Friars by 15 rebounds. And the Friars aren't a big team, but the Friars generally always out-rebound the opponent because they're so athletic and quick off their feet, and they have a point guard. We all know who Chris Dunn is, who's just an unbelievable rebounder, who's such a good athlete with those long arms, just goes up over everybody and rebounds. But Friars getting out-rebounded by 15 rebounds is a pretty impressive thing. The only thing the Friars did better than them, it was 19 turnovers to 9 in the Friars' favor, so that kind of kept us in. But on the other side, after giving them credit, totally tipping my hat to Seton Hall, they really played a complete game. They played pretty much a perfect game. They really, really played well. From the Friars' point of view, the shooting woes have been a problem, and it's continuing to be, both from the field and at the free throw line. They left a lot of free throws at the line, and you know that could have made the difference in the game. And they just couldn't make open shots. They run the offense, run it really well, get a nice open look from 15, 18 feet, and nobody could knock them down. I mean, the guy that was the Friars' marksman at the beginning of the year, freshman Ryan Fizikas, who had missed a number of games because of the bout with mono, This was, I believe, his third game back, and he still hasn't found his stroke. I mean, he's every game you look at him, and he looks a little stronger. He looks like he's putting some of the weight back on. He looked like a bag of bones his first game back. But I think it's still affecting his shot. He's not shooting well. The guy that was, you know, that we thought last year was recruited as a shooter, Jalen Lindsey, does everything well and is probably the worst shooter you'll ever see in your life. You know, he's turned out to be a pleasant surprise with his defense and rebounding, but he's just a horrific shooter. So we do have shooting woes. I mean, Ben, Big Ben, usually steps out and makes some threes. He scored. He got his points. I believe he got 21, but I think he was 4-for-15 from the floor. He made them at the free throw line. He's a great free throw shooter, and he takes it in strong. So he had to really work for his points. And Chris fouled out of this game too. Chris Dunn, the fourth foul, and I'm never one to complain about officials. That's really not my style. A cowboy will tell you that. And I just don't. The people at the dunk are screaming at the officials, and you never hear it from me. But the fourth foul was a really, really iffy offensive foul, and the fifth foul looked like a travel before Chris even got near to try to strip the guy.
Right.
And in all honesty, I absolutely know this, that when these three guys are sitting in the locker room before the game, that's some of the things they talk about. You talk about who the marquee players are, and you say, you know, if we're going to give him, we got to be aware when he has three. If we're going to give him his fourth or his fifth, we got to make sure it's a good foul. You don't want to, that's the last thing you want to do as an official, is take the star from either team out of the game with a questionable call. And it was two questionable calls. So, you know, we had to play a lot without him because he was in foul trouble, and then we had to play the last 3 minutes without him because he fouled out. So that was certainly a factor. Not making excuses, that was a factor. The biggest factor was the Friars couldn't knock down shots, and they've lost two out of their last three, and the one that they won against Creighton, they couldn't knock down shots either. So they something like that is usually cyclical, and you'll snap out of it. And hopefully they're going to snap out of it in a big way Tuesday night and make some shots, because they were in an iron part of the schedule. And if they continue to not be able to make shots, you're not going to beat ranked teams, and they're playing three of them in a row. You're not going to beat nationally ranked teams without being able to knock down shots. So hopefully that changes Tuesday night. But the biggest thing, in all honesty, and that was strictly a Friars point of view, really hats off to Seton Hall. There aren't too many teams in the country that would have beaten them Saturday. They really played a near perfect basketball game. They were very impressive.
Kadeem Carrington was 12-for-12 at the line for
this is a guy that comes off
for
the
Seton
bench.
Hall.
He comes off the bench. I mean, they were outstanding. Top to bottom, their bench, I think, scored almost as many points as their starters. I mean, it didn't matter who they brought in. They really, really played a nice game.
Ken Whitehead's
He's a stud. He's a stud.
Yep, he had 15 with 7 assists. B2 had 21 and 9. Cowboy, anything to add?
Senior pretty much said it. So with college basketball, with the, you know, it's more probably the sport that I you know, personally, I am very much more of a fan than an analyst. Like, I pretty much only watch the Friars. So I try not, I try to just let Senior go with the analysis, because no, and in seriousness, I don't want I don't want to add my two cents where my knowledge base is not there. So and I true, you know, NBA, NFL, you know, MMA, boxing, I can really look at things like an analyst. I really, really feel like I know my stuff. College basketball, I know the Friars, and I'm a huge Friars fan. It's a lot of fun to just be a fan of a team and kind of see it from that lens instead of through the analyst lens. But well said, Senior.
Excellent. I like that. Very good. And it was. It was. But again, it was a tough day. It was a tough weekend for a lot of the ranks. Even number one Kansas, coming off the loss earlier in the week to West Virginia, struggled, hung on for a 7-point win against TCU. As we mentioned, took an Oklahoma shot late and a Heald steal to survive 70-68 over a very good West Virginia team. Villanova played a rock fight and hung on to beat Georgetown 55-50. That game was ugly. But Georgetown's I'm used to watching Georgetown play ugly. Xavier, another close game. They beat Marquette yesterday. Again, PC wasn't the only top 25 to go down. Eighth-ranked Miami lost. Clemson beat them. Tigers have been playing pretty well. 12-6 now. 5-1 in the ACC. Duke lost. Oh, God, what were you saying?
Sorry, I just can't help but throw this one in. To me, the hugest one of the day yesterday was a team that never loses at home. Duke lost at Cameron.
Yep, I was about to get
95-91 to the Fighting Irish. There you go. Yep. I know you're a supporter of the Irish.
I do love the Irish.
Great win for them.
It is a big win, 95-91. Mike Bray does get these wins occasionally during the regular season. He just needs to win them in March.
Winning at Cameron is extremely impressive, no doubt about it. There isn't a tougher arena to play in America.
Honestly, there isn't. Another team that lost on the road that, you know, will go down in the rankings, not just PC, but the Wildcats of Kentucky. Big win for Bruce Pearl and the Tigers of Auburn, winning 75-70 in their building. So Kentucky will drop in the rankings. Anybody else ranked over the weekend? Let's see. Butler beat St. John's by 20.
Michigan State.
I was looking at Saturday. Yeah, Michigan State losing by a point at the Kohl Center to Wisconsin. TCU, who's kind of going through the motions this year since they can't do anything, 17-0 after a 15-point win today over Tulane. A game you were mentioning earlier, Senior, Florida State knocking off number 13 Virginia, 69-62 down in Tallahassee. And how about Iowa, 5-0 in the Big Ten for the first time since 1996, I think, with an 82-71 win
today. Two wins over Michigan State.
And two wins over the Spartans.
And today, that was two in a row. That team is good as Michigan State, and they've got Valentine back now.
Yeah,
they've lost.
Yeah, they're going to need him back.
I don't know how much you know about the Irish, but they had a kid come off the bench against Duke, a kid named Colson.
Yep.
And scored 31-11 rebounds off the bench. At Cameron.
Bonzi Colson.
Is he related to the Bonzi Colson that played for URI?
I
have to look. Bonzi Colson was the center for URI when they had Tommy Garrick and Silk Owens and made their run in the NCAA tournament. And he now is the boys' varsity coach at New Bedford High School in New Bedford, Mass. And it just seems like a weird name. I mean, how many Bonzies are there? It seems like he's a junior.
That's a good question. Well, you know what? You know where he's from. You might be right, Senior, because he's actually from New Bedford, Mass.
Oh, that's definitely him, man.
So I'm going to look up on Wiki.
Two Bonzi Colsons from New Bedford, Mass?
Yeah.
Take that to the bank. You don't even need to look it up, Scott.
That's pretty cool. Bonzi was a center. He was a big boy.
Let's see.
And in those days, I was a lot younger, and I had venom for teams, and I hated Bonzi Colson. I used to hate URI being a PC fan. The rivalry was brutal in those days. There were even brawls and games and stuff. Oh, man, did we hate URI in those days. Roger will tell you about that.
Oh, yeah.
I can confirm the URI hatred. big time.
According to this, Bonzi Colson went to St. Andrews in Barrington.
There you go. That's so a great when, place to go.
Oh, good. I know a lot of people who went to St. Andrews. But so the URI hate. So if you remember the team, the deep run with Cowboy and Tyson Wheeler.
Oh, yeah. And Lamar Odom. Yep.
Senior rooted against them hard. Hard.
there weren't a lot of gym. I mean, as cool as it was to see them make, and of course they lost in the regional final that year to Stanford, which I'm pretty sure was the Lopez brothers.
It is him. There it is. I'm seeing it. It is him. It's Bonzi's son.
Yep.
Just read it.
It was cool to see. It was cool to see URI that go that far. But Jim Herrick was, as we've seen throughout his career, is not a very likable guy. So, with all of the issues that he's brought to programs, and he had a huge game. He's averaging 12 points and 7 boards, and he had 31-11 on the Cameron floor on Saturday in a win over
Duke.
Quite
impressive. Yeah, he's a 6'9" forward, so he's like the size his father was, pretty similar. Yeah.
And they've lost most of their guys, but Duke is still the defending national champions.
No, so it's still good. Duke's really good.
Still a very impressive win. So congrats to the Irish for that. But of course, so PC should feel better knowing that they weren't the team that lost.
It's conference play time, and teams are taking their lumps.
Yep.
We know the Friars are good. I certainly wasn't expecting them to go like 13-3 in the Big East or anything. The league is way too tough.
Yeah, exactly.
If they could go 10-6, we'll be good.
Big one on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you have to win Tuesday right now.
Looking ahead to the week in general in college hoops, Monday night, big game in Ames. Second-ranked Oklahoma taking on number 17 Iowa State. So that's a big game to pay attention to. Of course, Tuesday I mentioned, games we'll all be paying attention to. Actually, you guys will be there. 23rd-ranked Butler and number 12 Providence. We'll see what the rankings are that week. Kansas will be in Stillwater to take on Oklahoma. This dangerous Clemson team heads into Virginia to take on the 13th-ranked Cavaliers. If I'm Tony Bennett, I'm a little nervous about that game. Georgetown kind of has a must-win here. They go into the Cintas Center to take on number 7 Xavier.
If they got that.
They need that one. They need that one pretty bad.
Ben Simmons will be playing against 15-2 Texas A&M. That'll be an interesting one.
Yep.
Yeah, SMU great will night try Tuesday night.
Yes. Yep. SMU will try and stay undefeated. They host Houston. Big games on Wednesday. Michigan State trying to get off the schneid. I don't know if Valentine's back that night, but they
host 3 out of 4.
Yep, they host Nebraska that night. West Virginia's home to Texas. They'll try and get back on track there. Nova will be at Seton. That's a big game in the Big East. Wednesday night, Nova will be at Seton Hall. So big game at the Rock.
Yeah, we'll be rooting the Pirates Rock. On. No, Nova
I believe that's on
really
my network.
Good.
I think that's on my network. It's CBS Sports Network. Thursday, anything? Let's see. Iowa's at Rutgers. Other big games. Purdue's home to Ohio State. Nothing too crazy there. And Friday's usually all Mac and the Ivy
Saturday,
League.
Saturday, Providence at Villanova. High noon. High noon Saturday.
Yep, big game. I'll actually be in the state on Saturday. I'll be in the basement of my PIC, and I'll be watching that and Georgetown UConn at the same time.
There you go.
So big games big games this week.
Big,
and then of course Sunday our big football games. Cowboy, I didn't get to watch it yet, but I do know that my man Deontay Wilder did successfully defend his WBC heavyweight title on Saturday night. Is that correct?
Yes, it was Saturday night. And
Saturday night, yeah.
He, ninth round knockout. It was a good fight. Spilska was game, put up a good fight. He won some rounds, but Wilder was a real, real ugly knockout. Knocked him just completely cold with a nice right hand. And he's got a real fight next. He's got, in theory at least, he's going to fight Alexander Povetkin next. And that's going to be an even fight. That's an even fight. It's by far Wilder's biggest test as a pro. And on the undercard, we have another, after not having an American heavyweight champion forever, we have another American heavyweight champion as Charles Martin knocked out Char Glazkov in the third round. So, yeah, the state of the heavyweight division is, the Klitschkos were very dominant, but it's a little more fun when you have some of these younger American guys making some noise.
Yeah, guys you can lean on. Absolutely. And I watched, which is weird, I think some of it's age. I watched on HBO, I watched Klitschko lose his title to Tyson Fury, and he looked very, very sluggish. I don't
it was
know if
a
it's
bad
just age
fight,
or
man.
Yeah, it was not a fun fight anyway.
No, it was just a really, really bad fight. Klitschko didn't show up. He didn't throw punches.
No, he didn't throw any punches.
But,
it was
yeah,
ridiculous.
He exercised his because it wasn't so much how what Fury did as what Klitschko didn't do. It's not like Fury did anything great.
No, they all danced around, and he threw nothing in that fight. Nothing at all. It was bizarre.
But your boy Wilder called him out after the fight, which was nice. But he's got to fight. Fury is going to fight Klitschko again. Klitschko exercised his immediate rematch clause, so we'll see. I think you have to favor Klitschko in that fight because he's going to come in. You know, a lot of times in rematches, if a guy gets bad, even if I'm a dog, they kind of take that soul and they have a lot of trouble. But that wasn't the case in this fight. Klitschko just fought terrible. I think he'll be a little busier, and I think he'll win.
Yeah. Well, you said that about Ronda and Holly and Holt, right? You don't think Ronda could beat her again?
Well, Holly
or beat her at all.
Holly took her soul, Scott. A lot different than what Fury and Klitschko did. Holly beat her. Maybe I'm wrong. And I mean, Rousey certainly has the tools to beat her, but when you get beat that bad by somebody, I mean, she got thrashed and beat up and sent to the hospital. It's a real tough mental block to get over. And you see it all the time. The guy fighting tonight, TJ Dillashaw is a good example of that. He fought Renan Barao when Barao was a top 3 pound for pound guy. Dillashaw was like the 8th ranked guy in the division, a late substitute. He beat him pillar to post, and then the rematch wasn't as close. And that's usually what happens. So
yep.
Frankie Edgar, BJ Penn, same thing. So we'll see. Rousey, if she's going to fight her, better try to get her to the mat right away. Don't stand with her at all. And if she can do that, she can win. If she stands with her, she's going to get her head knocked off again.
Apparently, guys, last night after...
Can I just interject something here?
Yeah,
meet
sure.
The guy who knows absolutely nothing about this UFC sport, I'll admit it, but you guys got me where I'm tuned in right now to this Dillashaw thing coming on. I didn't realize it was at the Garden.
Yeah, it's at the Hub.
The McGregor fight was at the Garden.
It was great. They were just leading into it, and they were showing pictures of Marvin Hagler and Rocky Marciano. I'm like, okay, this is good stuff.
You know, Senior, I was in a mood a few couple weeks ago. I was on YouTube, and I was finding different of those like sports centuries and stuff. I never realized how much I loved watching Marvin Hagler fight. I loved watching him fight. He might be one of my favorite. I would say if you ask my favorite fighters of the 80s. They were – obviously Mike Tyson was my favorite. But I would say Mike Tyson, Marvin Hagler, and
I was a huge fan of Hagler, but I really liked the Hitman too.
Oh, I love Tom Hearns.
That fight when they fought is might be the greatest – I believe it was 4 rounds in the history of boxing.
That first round, they beat the snot out of each other.
Every round. That was just unbelievable.
So I have a I'm sitting in my living room – well, we call it my living room, but we basically took my decked out sports man cave and put it into a living room. And one of my prized possessions that I have up on the wall here is a painting a local artist did of the stare down of Hagler and Leonard. Big painting.
Great.
Check it out.
If there is any more unlikable athlete in the history of the universe, it is Sugar Ray Leonard. I absolutely despise Sugar Ray Leonard. He is such a prick.
I like
absolutely him. Cannot stand him.
I liked him as a fighter. He was really good.
He was an incredible fighter.
He ducked. You know what's how, in my opinion, how scummy Sugar Ray Leonard is? He ducked Marvin Hagler for so long, and then they became friends, and then Hagler told him, yeah, I didn't fight so great in my last fight. I'm not sure. And then all of a sudden, Sugar Ray Leonard decides to fight him.
It was a great fight. But, I mean, Sugar Ray was moving up quite a bit in weight.
Yeah,
and he hadn't was much fought. Bigger than him. I mean, wasn't Leonard coming off like a 3-year layoff?
Yeah,
and, right.
And I was rooting like hell for Hagler, and a lot of people thought it was a bad decision. And
I thought it was a bad decision,
and I didn't think so. I thought Sugar Ray fought an unbelievable fight.
I thought he did too, but I still think he could.
I didn't think he could do it.
Rewatching the fight, it was a close fight. It was a very close fight.
But Sugar Ray dominated the end, and that means a lot.
Well, the end of the rounds. And, I mean, it was one of those where, you know, do you take the sizzle or the steak? You know, Hagler did a lot of body work he didn't get credit for. And to Hagler's credit, he never fought again. That was it.
Yeah, he walked away.
He walked away.
Yep.
Those were great fights, and Sugar Ray's fights with Hearns were great fights, too. Oh, Sugar Ray was super. He was a great – those three guys, I mean, that's just – you put any two of those three guys in the ring together, and every one was a classic. You know,
yep.
Great stuff. Just
I agree. Stuff. Speaking of boxing, a great 30 for 30 that you need to watch, in case, I don't know if you have – either of you guys did. It was one of the early ones they did that year was the one about – there's a few of them, but one of the first ones they did was the one about the Muhammad Ali Larry Holmes fight, which is if you were a fan back in those days. I mean, I was a kid. I mean, I was 7 when it happened. If you were a fan, like you were senior, probably through the 70s, that was that fight is just very uncomfortable to watch, particularly if you're a fan of the great one, because he got murdered in that fight against Larry Holmes. And I remember, and even Larry Holmes said it. He's like. The referee, a lot of people were giving the referee a lot of crap in that fight because, I mean, Ali couldn't even defend himself. I mean, he was just getting bludgeoned.
He was too old. He shouldn't have been in there.
And Larry Holmes is actually, apparently he said on this special, this 30 for 30, he was telling the ref, please stop this. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't know what you're, like he was jawing with him throughout the, what are you waiting for? End this. I don't want to hurt this guy. It's amazing that you never see a situation like that where a fighter's – obviously, Larry Holmes was one of Ali's sparring partners, so there was always a very close relationship there. And Larry Holmes said in this special that he was – I forgot who the referee was, but he was telling the ref, please, Why? What are you waiting for? He hasn't thrown a punch in three rounds. What are you waiting for? Yeah. You know, it was tough to watch. Yeah. But there's been some other great ones. There was Nomas. And if there's one guy, maybe there was one guy that I didn't.
I never liked Duran. Okay.
Roberto Duran was a piece of shit. Yeah. And I'll tell you why. Because
I rooted for Sugar Ray against him.
I will say that because Roberto Duran gave Sugar Ray's kids the finger. I mean, that's just classless. I mean, and Sugar Ray's kids were like four. I mean, it was ridiculous.
And if you went to, it was a couple of years after that he fought Hearns, and I remember it was pay-per-view, and I went to a guy's house. It was, you know, pay-per-view was just really getting started in those days, and I went to a big party, and all these guys, I'm telling you, everybody there thought Duran was going to win, and they were all rooting for Duran, and I was like, no way, Hearns is going to knock him out. and I was right. Tommy destroyed him.
Yeah, I love Tommy Hearns.
The Hitman was great. He was great.
And they just released another 30 for 30. There's a few boxing 30 for 30s. There's one was called No Mas, and it's about the two of them. And then there's one. There was one that they released in the last few months called Chasing. I think it was Chasing Tyson, and it's about the whole saga between Tyson and Evander Holyfield. As to why, you know, when they finally met in 96, you know, probably 6 years after they really should have fought. And, of course, Buster Douglas threw that whole wrench in the mix. But I remember one of my favorite fighters in the 90s was Riddick Bowe. But Riddick Bowe was another guy, kind of like Buster Douglas and Michael Doakes and those guys, who win a title and then don't care. And then they go to the buffet. And then their next fight, they weigh like, you know, 265 pounds.
it began a bad time for the heavyweight division, and then Lennox Lewis came along and was a good champion, though.
Yeah,
he was the next really good champion.
The Bo Holyfield trilogy was awesome.
Oh, yeah. It's great. Oh yeah. My god, it was awesome. I loved watching. I loved Riddick Bo. I don't say I hated Holyfield, but you know, Holyfield, I'll give him his props. You know, here's a guy who was a light heavyweight who went up in weight. He never really was and I would never say he wasn't durable. He could take a punch because there were fights. I mean, he lost to Michael Moore. And Michael Moore was never really any great shakes. But he could take a punch, Holyfield. You know, and then he had, you know, there were always rumors that he took steroids because he had, apparently he had heart issues in the mid-90s and things like that. But
cocaine. I just think he had a big cocaine problem.
I didn't know that. Did he really?
Yeah. They said when he fought Burt Cooper, he'd been up for like 3 days. That's why he only lost. Seriously.
I never knew that. Wow.
Burt Cooper was a tough guy, though.
Yeah, Burt Cooper had like 20 losses, though, and Holyfield was a heavyweight champion.
Right. He would give I mean, he was in some wars. I remember the Michael Moore-Burt Cooper fight. One of those fights where both guys got knocked down four or five times. It was a super fight.
Yeah. But yeah, no, there's some good 30 for 30s right now, the boxing ones. And that one is pretty good. Goes through the whole saga of the 90s while Tyson was in the clink and Holyfield was fighting Bo and and then they finally fought in 96. And then, you know, and then, of course, the ear biting. And that was pretty much the end of that.
Okay, I'm going to tell you one quick story, Scott.
Yeah, sure.
Got me going in the past. I think
no, go right ahead.
Appreciate this, and
go right ahead.
And then I'll let you take back over.
No, please, go ahead.
The Hagler,
funnier.
The Hagler Sugar Ray Leonard fight, mm-hmm. Pay-per-view event. I've got about 30 people over my house. It's before the fight, and we put a bunch of things in a hat with each guy in a round. We're just going to have everybody throw a couple of bucks in, have a little
that's cool
for fun, and we're pulling them out of a hat. And my buddy Ronnie. Is sitting at the end of the couch, like right next to, and the bedrooms are right off to the right there. There's a little hallway. And he looks to his right, and there's this little guy, about 6 years old, who's supposed to be sleeping because it's pretty late, who came crawling out of his bedroom but didn't want his parents to see him. And he looked up at Ronnie and said, "Hey, Ron, give me Hagler in the fifth." That was the cowboy.
That's awesome. I was hoping for Hagler in the fifth, cowboy.
Absolutely.
I loved my brother. Both my older brothers loved Marvin Hagler. I love Marvin Hagler. And there was a guy who always thought that Hagler's problem was he had a self-esteem issue, but Hagler always thought he was getting screwed. Going back to when he didn't beat Vito Antifermo. And then Antifermo lost to that British
screwed in that decision. That was a joke.
Yeah, and then Antifermo lost to that British dude. I can't think of his name. I always forget his name. And then Hagler went to London. Of course, everybody there, you know, all these racist epithets, and Hagler knocked him out, and then they got stuff thrown at him, or rushing the ring. And it was total chaos. But I have a funny boxing story before we wrap up. My oldest brother Jeff never bought pay-per-views. That wasn't his gig. My brother Chris and I used to buy them all the time, wrestling, boxing, all sorts of stuff. My brother Jeff just wanted to buy one fight because one of his favorite guys used to like watching was Michael Spinks. And he decided he wanted to buy the Spinks Tyson fight. And so they were at a mutual friend's house. My brother gave the guy money and bought the pay-per-view because he had a little bit, but he was living with us. He had a bigger house. So they had a bunch of guys over, same thing like you did, Cowboy, with a senior with the Hagler-Leonard fight. And my brother, you know, he's like all anticipated, oh, it's going to be a war, and, oh, you know, Spink's long reach, Tyson's not going to be able to hit him and everything. And my brother goes and takes a piss, and he comes back out, and that's it. He walks in, and Spinks is flat on his back, and that's it. Good night. 91 seconds, and Tyson knocked him cold. There's my brother's $50 right down the drain. That's what happens. I have another good. I mean, that's one reason why I love Tyson. One more. I got actually another fun story. I was on vacation. I was in Sturbridge actually, and my parents and I were about to go out to dinner, but on ABC Wide World of Sports, Tyson was about to fight Marvis Frazier, Smokin' Joe's son, and there was no doubt Tyson was going to absolutely lay him out in about a minute. And my mom's in the car, and I said to my dad, I said, "Tell mom I'll be out in a minute. We're going out to dinner." I'm like, "I know. I want to just watch the fight real quick." He goes, "What do you mean real quick?" I said, "Don't worry, I'll be in the car." So my dad walked out, and sure enough, you know, in 33 seconds, you know, Marvis Frazier was on the floor, and I got in the car, and we went off, and my mother's like, "I thought I was going to have to sit here for an hour." I said, "No, Ma, believe me, it's Iron Mike. Marvis was not his father. Let's put it that way." Were you a Joe Frazier guy, senior? Who was your favorite guy, like, in that golden era in the 70s?
I was an Ali guy all the way. Okay. I loved Muhammad, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those were great fights, though. You know, Smoking, those were style fights that made them so good. Those were some of the greatest heavyweight fights of all time, the Ali Frazier fights, the Ali Norton fights, the Rumble in the Jungle.
Yep.
Where this is Ali way past his prime even then, and goes in with a game plan and beat that guy. Nobody thought Foreman was beatable. They thought he was totally unbeatable. Nobody gave Muhammad any kind of a chance. But I can remember going back to when he beat Sonny Liston the first time. I was a little kid, and my brothers were telling me that he was going to beat him, and my father was saying, "No way, you know, my father didn't like the loudmouth guy, you know." And I remember him as Cassius Clay. I remember him at his best, the Cleveland-Houston fight, which is considered the pinnacle of his career, where you never saw a heavyweight that fast. I mean, he was just unbelievable. I don't think there'll ever be a heavyweight that's as good as him. And to have carried it on as long as he did, I mean, you talked about Holmes, but I mean, he had been through a real lot by then, and he was way over the hill. But even past his prime, he was able to beat really good fighters, you know, and fight wars like with Kenny Norton too. And just an amazing athlete. You know, there's only one Muhammad to me. He's the greatest fighter of all time. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
So another staple on the wall here in the man cave is a fight poster, Ali versus Norton, signed by Kenny Norton, who I met the day I got married in Las Vegas.
That's awesome.
Yes, rest in peace.
That's right. And him and his son never didn't speak. And, you know, obviously his son has, what, 3 Super Bowl rings. So.
That's right.
I talked to Kenny for a while when there weren't a lot of people in there, and I talked to him for about 20 minutes. And you could tell that the fights definitely took their toll. Definitely took their toll. But very, 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 very nice gentleman.
Yeah.
If you remember watching those fights, they'd have taken their toll on anybody. I mean, these were big guys that really fought wars, you know. Oh, my God. It's no wonder Muhammad's in the condition he's in now, you know.
Well, they never had a fight. They never had a fight at Yankee Stadium again after Ali Norton. Because the fans chewed up the infield and everything, but
that's the poster I have. It's got Yankee Stadium on it.
Yep, there that was go. From 76, I think, right? 70, something like that. Guys, what a blast. I'm going to talk more boxing another day. When we get to the spring and you know, and the summer, and we have some, you know, some We have nothing else other than baseball. We definitely got to get in some more boxing talk. I love talking boxing. I'm kind of getting back.
You got to hope Canelo and Triple G sign to fight each other.
Oh, my God. I would be so pumped for that. I'm a big Canelo guy. I like Canelo.
So I think Triple G's on another level, in my opinion. But Canelo, I give him credit because he wants to fight, and not a lot of guys do.
So. I know. I've been enjoying Triple G, too. I've been going crazy on both my HBO and my Showtime and just watching fights. So I'm actually – I have in the background right now, I have Rios and Bradley from, I think this is from April.
Rios came in out of shape and got his clock clean.
Yeah, Bradley, you could tell Bradley's beating the shit out of him, yeah.
Bradley Pacquiao 3, the fight no one wants.
Or the fight, and then there's the fight May 2nd, back on May 2nd that everyone spent $100 for nothing, $100 nap. But anyway, but I could talk about boxing. I'm going to thank you for this, Cowboy. You're really getting me back into boxing because I hadn't been really paying attention in the last few years, but you know, getting to know you and you getting me back into it as well. So now anytime I can, I either, I either watch HBO, my HBO Go or my Showtime anytime, or actually, this is interesting, on Amazon Fire TV, there's the Ring app, like Ring Magazine. They have an app and they've got old fights. I actually, the other night, watched De La Hoya and the fight from 99, the real good one. Not Sweet Pea.
Trinidad,
yeah. The one from 99, De La Hoya and Felix Trinidad.
De La Hoya ran away the last four rounds and gave it away.
Yeah, he beat it was amazing. I just perplexed at that fight. But, yeah, I've been watching old stuff like crazy, and I'm starting to watch the Fight Game show with Jim Lampley on HBO. I'm, like, so back into –
So what you got to watch on HBO Go, Scott, if you haven't already, is Legendary Nights, the story of Gotti Ward. Unbelievable. It's the best boxing documentary I've ever seen.
Yeah, I actually was buzzing through. I saw it there. I'm going to watch it after this fight's over.
It's really, really worth it. There won't be a dry eye at the end of it, I promise.
Oh, fantastic. Gentlemen, great show, as always. We will be back... Well, we won't be back next Sunday night because it's a Rumble. We'll talk next week and get you ready for Super Bowl 50. Why don't they just use L, right? Isn't L the Roman numeral for 50? Why don't they just use L? Would have been a pretty cool thing, but instead they decided to do the actual number 50. And break down what you guys hope would be a second straight back-to-back, depending who the opponent is. But at least you want the shot, so... Hop on, because here at Sports Evolution, if you're not, it'll pass you by. For the Cowboys, I'm Scott. Have a great week. Your everlasting summer, you can see it fading fast. So you grab a piece of something that you think is gonna last. Well, you wouldn't even know a diamond if you held it in your hand. The things you think are precious, I can't understand. Are you reeling in the years? Stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the years? Stowing away the time. Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? You've been telling me you're a genius since you were 17. In all the time I've known you, I still don't know what you mean. Weekend in the college didn't turn out like you planned. The things that pass for knowledge I can't understand. Are you reeling in the years? Stowing away the time. Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the years? Stowing away the time. Have you had enough of mine?
etched upon my mind. After all the things we've done and seen, you find another man. The things you think are useless, I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the keys?